This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I'm Hayes Permar. I'm in the union of fill-in hosts who all get employed this week. Big week for the fill-in radio host union. We come strong. We do membership drives during this week because everybody's like, man, a lot of fill-in radio hosts getting gigs this week.
Yeah, I remember the first time I was ever back in the studio post-pandemic was us doing like a July 4th or 5th show in 2020 when no one was here.
Yeah.
No one was here. Yeah, that was, I mean, again, part of the union, card-carrying members.
No one's here. Brian Geisinger from acsports.com is here. I have reached out to some other folks just about different topics during the week, you know, some national media guys who I know who, you know, tend to talk on these things. They're all at the beach.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't know, man.
Except for the NBA guys.
You might
be able to, because they're like waiting for a Kevin Durant trade to come through.
And
you could maybe, that's the one league you could maybe pull from.
And we've got NHL draft this week.
Yeah.
So we will talk some NHL a little bit later. It's definitely going to be one of those subjects where I'm going to have to bring on people smarter than I am so they can educate me.
Can the Hurricanes draft Cale Makar? Can they do that?
Are we allowed to do that?
They should try. Just see if it works.
Well, no, here's been my...
Does he have a younger brother or something like that?
Here's how we get Cale Makar.
Yeah.
We smuggle him into the state. We tell everybody his name's Cale Maker. It's Cale Maker. He's a NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
Then we got him in here for, you know, keep him in here for 90 days.
That's right.
And then we declare rights.
Give him a fake residence in Lake Norman.
Yeah.
Like just a P.O. box in Lake Norman.
Heck, give him a real trip to Lake Norman and maybe he'll want to stay.
Like,
this is great. Like, give him a couple of golf rounds in the middle of the state somewhere.
Guys, the 32 Bojangles car.
We're all in on Cale Maker. can we trade all our draft picks for him? That is our advice though to the Hurricanes is like, go find the dude that's like that and then draft him.
Can you go find the best player in the world?
We've done pretty well recently in draft. Seth Jarvis was a couple years ago, right?
Svechkinov.
Was the year before that, right?
2018.
Yeah, and then Aho, not too long ago, 2016 maybe?
17 or something.
And he was second round pick too. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll see some more value picks like that. Right now, the NBA, the big news is all the free agency that's going on. This is how, I know whenever you come on with Josh Goodson and I, you like have to brace yourself for the stupidity where like, you know, you're like, all right, well, Darius Garland's a good player. And we're like, Darius Garland is not a good player because I've never heard of this guy. But so, like, that is kind of a joke, and we play into the I don't know anything about the NBA. But, man, nothing made me feel more removed and unknowledgeable about the NBA than seeing dudes that were getting max contracts. And I don't mean this in the, oh, my God, this dude's getting so much money. These sports are stupid. Like, that's you parachuting in on an ESPN headline and not having awareness of, you know, what contracts are worth these days or whatever. But there is an element of who's Zach LaVine, max contract, Darius Garland, max contract. Where even if, like, I've heard of these guys, but they weren't on my radar as being, like, you know, max contract guys. That, to be fair, I think there is some discussion to be had. Sometimes you get in that situation where the player is just so good in order to keep him, the only place you can get to is max contract, right? And so there are guys like the Paul Georges or the Andre Iguodalas of the world who are like maybe have gotten max contracts, but they don't. It's fine for your max contract. It doesn't mean that like you've got to be Giannis, Steph, or LeBron, right? At some point,
it's not how it works.
When their contract comes up, the time it is, you've got to play guys that even though they may not be on that super duper 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 star level, that's just sort of my own commentary on the thing. You could talk about that, or in general, what's been the biggest move so far in free agency, or the most surprising one?
Yeah, well, also, you were real close to knowing Darius Garland very well. Like, he almost went to Duke.
Okay.
They ended up getting Trey Jones to be the point guard.
Oh, I know him. If he signed a max contract, that's fine.
Sign a max contract. Yeah. His older brother, Tyus, signed a really nice deal to come back to play for Memphis again and be Jaws' backup. And I think he and Morant play together too. Memphis is just, they've got a really nice thing cooking in the oven there. Even though they're probably not going to be the two seed. Like, the West is going to be so good next year that Memphis will probably come down a couple of rungs. That's just the nature of it. I mean, the biggest trade so far has been, until Durant, you know, maybe gets moved. Although now, like Shams was on the Pat McAfee show earlier today. So Dennis's old buddy, Pat McAfee, I guess Dennis couldn't get Shams to come on here today.
Come on, DC Cox.
Yeah.
He's
phoning it in for 4th of July, just like everybody else.
Yeah, understood. I get it.
Yeah, I haven't taken days off
yet.
Get
Woj on here. I want a Woj bomb on the Adam Gold show.
But like Shams was saying like a little bit ago that Brooklyn is behaving in a way that they intend to bring Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving back to next year's team, which like we'll see. This all feels like a bit of a smokescreen. But the biggest move until Durant potentially gets traded or Kyrie goes to the Lakers in like a trade for Westbrook, which would be hilarious, was the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Utah Jazz swapping a bunch of stuff in exchange for Rudy Gobert. So a lot of good players, Patrick Beverley, Jordan Vanderbilt, these guys were starters for a Minnesota team that was in the playoff a year ago. Walker Kessler, draft pick, Leandro Balmoro, who was their first-round draft pick a year ago. 4 first-round picks. I believe all without protections and some pick swaps without protections as well. So, like, it's essentially 7 first-round draft picks and 2 guys that started on the roster this season in exchange for Rudy Gobert. So you're bringing in an all-NBA center to partner with Karl-Anthony Towns, another all-NBA center. Now they're going to try to play Towns at the 4 and let Gobert clean up some of their weaknesses, which were they were a bad defensive rebounding team. They could not protect the rim. We saw Brandon Clark and John Morant pummel them in the playoffs last season against Memphis. So you let Towns, who can really shoot, play the 4. You have Gobert be the guy that cleans up all the messes at the rim defensively, is your main pick-and-roll screen defender. So Minnesota is going to be really, really good, like at least in the regular season. They should win a lot of games. On paper, if they're healthy, they're going to be good. This is going to be an elite defense. Anthony Edwards, who, if you don't love Anthony Edwards already, you should. You should probably watch him play basketball. You should watch him in the movie Hustle, which he was really excellent villain in that movie. But so they've kind of gone all in, I think, on Anthony Edwards making like another big jump, becoming an all-star next season. And Karl-Anthony Towns, like really like turning, you know, becoming the biggest and best stretch 4 in the NBA next season. And certainly they'll he'll play some center and they'll stagger he and Gobert, but they traded a ton of picks. And now they're a little insulated because they have Anthony Edwards, who's 20 or 21 and is a future all-star. You have Towns, who's an all-star and is still just 25. So you're a little insulated from it, but it is a big risk and a big bet to go all in on the Gobert-Towns front court, which could get played off the court at times in the playoffs or have issues offensively because Gobert is a little limited offensively. But they're set up to be a really good team next season. Wendell Moore, who was at Duke, was not involved. It was one of the few draft picks or young players that was not involved in this trade. So Wendell Moore Jr. going to play with this crew next season. So that was hands down the biggest move. I think there's some thought that perhaps does the package that was exchanged for Gobert, does that do anything to the market for a guy like Kevin Durant, who, not apples to apples, but like is just a superior player to Rudy Gobert, is one of the best players in the history of basketball, is still averaged almost 30 points per game last season. I don't think it has to. Like, I don't think it's like, oh, because Utah got this much, now Brooklyn's going to want this much. Brooklyn's going to want the farm for Kevin Durant no matter what else happened. But I do wonder if that has caused, like, because the sum for Gobert was so large and because of the Durant possible trades just kind of like being a little gridlocked in terms at least of what's like publicly available right now, it does feel like that's just putting a freeze on everything else free agency wise for a couple of days now, except for TJ Warren from NC State, who signed with the Brooklyn Nets this morning. Congrats. I saw TJ Warren like a month ago in downtown Raleigh. So congratulations to him.
TJ Warren always pops up around Raleigh. He likes shopping at grocery stores that have nice food.
Yes.
I don't want to say where he shops or have people.
I've seen him at one as well. Grocery store. Yeah.
But he's always so unassuming, right? Like there's nothing. He's never walking around.
I've seen him at the North Carolina Museum of Art as well. Too.
Very cool.
Great minds.
Huge congrats to him. 2 years he's been out.
Yeah, basically he hasn't played in like 2 years while he's been dealing with injury.
But
so really, like since the bubble, he's played very little basketball.
And he's playing on a 1-year deal because he's going to have to prove it, which makes sense. I think that's good for him too. I think he has a very good chance, especially you know when he's playing on a team that obviously he's not going to be guarded by the number one guy.
It just depends on what Brooklyn ends up doing. He could be an off-the-bench guy. I mean, they could also be very easily like in the next couple of weeks, they could trade Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And all of a sudden, you're rebuilding. And yeah, TJ would, if assuming he's healthy, would get a lot of playing time and touches to just try to boost his value and get back into free agency.
He's just always had such a knack for scoring.
Yeah, he's put on earth to score basketball.
And my guess, he seems like the guy who, like, when he couldn't go on his foot, probably stood still and worked on his three-pointer. Yeah. You know, like, I'm betting on a comeback year from TJ Warren, even after stats probably suggest a two-year layoff in the NBA doesn't lead to much of a promising career. But, like, I feel like TJ Warren's got game left in
him.
Well,
also, his thing, too, was never like, oh, he's got this incredible first step. He just rockets by. Or hops. His thing was, like, he's incredibly crafty. He's got incredible shooting touch. Yeah. He's big. And again, the floater, which is like an impossible to defend shot, and he is elite at it for someone who's, you know, 6'8 or whatever. So again, a brilliant scorer, but we're still kind of waiting to see what's going to happen in terms of restricted free agency with DeAndre Ayton, who, so if the Phoenix is going to manage a trade for Durant, whether it's a two-team deal with Brooklyn or they need to involve a third or a fourth team to get the requisite assets to send to Brooklyn, Ayton's probably going to be involved in that in some way, shape, or form. But he, again, no, like, this entire season, after everyone was saying, pay the man, like being mad at Phoenix for not offering him a max extension last offseason, nothing's happened, you know, so far.
One of the best young centers out there.
We're still waiting to hear about what's going to happen with James Harden. Like, he declined a player option for next season that would have come in at $47.5 million. And it does seem like he'll, like, the new contract he would sign would be for more years, but for a lower, like, annual value.
Right.
And apparently he was the Sixers were chilling in the Hamptons this past weekend and looked really fun.
Yeah, everybody was taking off this week. We've gotten to it. The legislature, the front offices, nobody was working this weekend. That's another reason why nobody's leaving another conference. Nobody's working for the July weekend.
So I'll be curious to see, because Philadelphia's had a really nice offseason, like, in general. I'm sure they're going to work something out with Harden. So, like, that just seems like a matter of time. We're still waiting to hear on Colin Sexton. Or I guess we're still waiting to hear on Montrezl Harrell, but that could be in a bit of a holding pattern. After some of his,
I got no beef with Montrezl Harrell. Who were asking, whatever, I don't want to get into it, but people were like, "Oh, this can't be a record." He got caught with weed.
Yeah, 3 pounds of weed. But I don't care.
People are like, "This can't be a recreational amount." I'm like, over a certain amount of time and with a couple friends, it most certainly can be.
Yeah,
this guy's not. That is not drug dealer level weed to me. Don't be. No, no, no.
Carmelo Anthony still a free agent.
Still in the league.
And also, he is also a restricted free agent, but Caleb Martin, former NC State Mark Gottfried recruit,
sure,
Pac Pro. We saw his twin, Cody Martin, re-sign with the Hornets last week, $32 million over 4 years, which is awesome for a second contract for a second-round pick. My guess would be Caleb Martin is not going to get something along quite those lines, but is going to sign for a guy that was like kind of in the league, kind of not in the league. His first couple of seasons, had a nice year with Miami, and I would imagine there's a payday down the line for him. But just everything is sort of frozen right now because of Durant.
Always cool seeing things like that happen, where dudes that you weren't sure if they were going to make it in the NBA, and then they lock into those deals. Like, we saw it with Danny Green bouncing back and forth the G League. We saw it with PJ Tucker. I kept saying, I want to say PJ Warner.
I think are those both guys that Lavelle Moton worked out with?
Yes.
Danny Green and PJ Tucker.
The dudes that, like, you know, you weren't 100% sure if they were going to be long-term NBA guys. And then when you see that, like, the tide turn is like, no, these guys are now, even if they're not on the team they were this year, somebody's going to get them.
The power of the three-point shot, and also sort of like figuring out your role and just like being a star in your role, can really extend the career of guys and make them. I mean, PJ Tucker signed up for a lot of money with Philadelphia this offseason, even though he's Chris Paul's age, you know what I mean? He just stands in the corner and defends and, like, plays and shoots threes. But, like, yes, that's a very valuable skill set.
You mentioned You mentioned Cody Martin signing with the Hornets. We'll talk some more about the Hornets, including Miles Bridges, what he has done to his situation, what's going to happen in his situation, and other questions surrounding the Hornets and free agency with Brian Geisinger next. It's the Adam Gold Show. Hey, Spermar filling in on National Sports Radio Guest Host Week. Fortunately, it's a 4-day week. I mean, I'm not saying I don't want to be here. I'm just saying, when there aren't a lot of sports to fill the week, it's easier to get through 4 days than 5.
I just wonder how it is for people like me who are full time, but
You deal with it. Can't you, like, don't you get a guest host on, I mean, guest produce on some other shows? Like, you get to be the regular producer here, and then you get to be the guest producer somewhere else.
Well, I did do that on shows last week.
Yeah, okay, all right, yeah. And you get to complain about being there the whole time. Like, this show, there's nothing to do here. Like, I got to do double the work, right? So now I get to do the complaining. Brian Geisinger, I'm going to attempt to stump Brian Geisinger on NBA knowledge with knowledge that was given to me by the producer of the show, Dennis Cox, just before the program. Brian Geisinger, do you know what the Charlie Ward curse is?
Oh, it's the it has something to do with the New York Knicks. And
yes.
So they're, like, they haven't drafted a point guard in the first round, or they have not re-signed a first-round pick. Or is it a first-round point guard since Charlie Ward in the 1990s?
Are we going to give him credit? What did he say,
one
Cox?
Of the, yeah. If you don't give me credit, it's
hold
cool.
on. I thought you were going to the either the correct, the wrong, right, or wrong, the wrong buzzer, or the right ding, ding, ding. I thought you were going to give it to
no,
him.
No, I was going to give you the right ding, ding, ding. But they have not signed any of their draft picks to a multi-year extension since Charlie Ward.
No multi-year extension since Charlie Ward.
So I'm going to go ahead and give that to you.
Yeah, okay. I think we're going to give it to him.
Yeah.
That is correct.
I put the guard qualifier in there.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Oh, you got the applause. Even better.
It's pretty good.
It's even more high prestige than the ding, ding, ding. But why? Okay, we're talking NBA free agency.
What a inept franchise.
And also, like,
but keep it up, guys. What you're doing is definitely going great. It's working. I mean, they will re-sign RJ Barrett.
Right.
Like, they could sign him to an extension this offseason. He'll definitely be brought back. The curse of Charlie Ward will be over soon.
I think it ended. That's why it came up.
Mitchell Robinson.
Mitchell Robinson.
He broke it because they drafted him in the second round.
That's right.
But also, like, kudos to NBA players for, like, having the smarts and savvy for knowing, man, I need to get out of here.
Yeah, it's time for me to leave.
You drafted me and you had me. And now that I'm picking my spot, I'm gone. Like, the whole point of NBA contracts feels like has been to honor free agency because the league realized it needs to be a thing. Like, you can't just lock guys in and say, once you're drafted by a team, you're there for 20 years, right? Yeah. But to make it financially viable for teams to hold on to their dudes, right? So in theory, guys are incentivized to make more money by staying with the team that drafts them.
They can sign for more years, more money, with higher annual increases in your salary. A lot of this is also just like New York and James Dolan and whomever is running the front office for him at that time. Like, you know, they traded for Carmelo Anthony in 2011 by trading a host of good young players and picks when, like, Carmelo Anthony in 4 months after that was going to become a free agent and they could have just signed him for using cap space. So that probably also, but that was 12 years ago now.
Yeah, be fair to the Knicks. It's not all that guys have decided not to sign with you. It's that you have foolishly traded away some of these guys who never had the opportunity to re-sign with you. Sure. Looking a little bit closer to home with the Charlotte Hornets, the biggest question, I think, coming into free agency was what happens with Miles Bridges. A restricted free agent, I mean, basically, if I understand right, Charlotte could have matched any offer that somebody made. And we would have seen what he got. He obviously had a good year to go into restricted free agency and test the market or whatever. But late last week, we had reports, including pictures and video, of domestic abuse. He was arrested and charged with felony assault. I don't know exactly what the updates are on the charges. But where do we stand right now with Miles Bridges and what the Hornets are doing or not doing from him? Have they officially said anything about it?
Yeah, not other than that they were, and the NBA put out a statement similar to this, but both just saying that they were gathering facts and information, which I think is, like, probably the right thing at least to do at this point.
Yeah.
I do think both will come down with more of a hammer in the not too distant future, but between now and then, you put out a statement basically that says nothing, but at least notes that you're doing your due diligence to gather all the facts. Look, Miles, he had a really nice season 2 years ago, but this year was a breakout year. You know, 20 points per game, 4 assists, 7 rebounds per game, was, you know, a guy that you could run offense through, that could play with LaMelo, was just 24 years old, and you know, looked like he was in line for $100+ million contract this offseason. And it sort of seemed like Charlotte had not just LaMelo to build around, but they had, like, a second tentpole. And as far as, like, the extension with Bridges, for me, that felt like a like not a an if but when situation. In part because even at the draft, I mean, even regardless of what they did at the draft, I thought that was going to be the case because Charlotte could offer more years, more money because they have his bird rights no matter what. Like they could always outbid or match any offer. But also at the draft, they had the 13th and the 15th selections. They drafted Jalen Duren with the 13th pick and they traded him to the Detroit Pistons in a three-team deal that also involved the aforementioned New York Knicks. And they didn't get a player in return for that, right? So, but they got some future, like, middling second-round picks and a late first-round pick. I believe that belongs to Denver for 2023, or it's Denver's pick but is owed to Charlotte. It's probably not going to be that good. But so they basically took the salary slot that would have been Jalen Duren's, like $4 or $5 million for the 13th pick, and they effectively like just deleted that line item off the books, in part because it was like, well, that's more money you could throw to Miles Bridges for next season and stay below the luxury tax, which they never pay with Michael Jordan as the owner, the governor. Obviously, all of that has gone up in smoke, and Miles Bridges, what he did to his wife, Michelle Johnson is her name, it's disturbing. It's disgusting. I can't say enough words to express my like disappointment and sadness. You hope everyone in the family, Michelle, the children, you hope like, cause his kids witnessed this, you hope they're okay. There's just no way to scrub what he did, especially now that there are photos and images, but also like him doing this and then him fleeing and not being there when police arrive and then posting bail, you know, hours later. And this is something that is, you know, I think the NBA has it. This is a society issue, but the NBA has its own, like within the NBA, they have problems with this. And it's something that I do think like the Hornets will probably rescind the qualifying offer for Miles Bridges, which would make him an unrestricted free agent. My guess is that there will be some type of suspension for him via the NBA. Speculation, obviously, but that seems likely. But beyond that, I don't know. And like the hope would be that there is something that the league does to take a stand on this that goes beyond just a punishment for Miles Bridges. Like they need, you know, Miles is going to need help after this. Not like he's the sympathetic character. He's not.
Right.
But, you know, the league needs to do something as far as like education prevention goes, beyond just a punishment for a player. Because there's still plenty of guys in the NBA that are coaches, that are players on rosters, that have also been charged with domestic violence or accused of domestic violence. And so there needs to be something in place to actually, like, to mend those fences. But with Bridges, it's beyond disappointing. And what he did is obviously completely sickening and unacceptable. And, again, you just most importantly, you hope the family is okay and that they're safe and supported. And with Bridges, like, I'm sure he's not done in the NBA. Like, I bet he'll play, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. And I'm hopeful that it's not in a Hornets uniform.
You think the Hornets should move on from him at this point? Yeah, like,
need to. I actually don't think there's like another option. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you hate to think about it in these terms, but it's like, yeah, eventually, like, he'll probably sign 2 years from now or whatever. He'll sign with another team. It'll be for very cheap. And that will probably be frustrating, but like, that's beside the point. You know what I mean? You cannot sign this guy after what just happened.
All right. Okay. I'm not just playing devil's advocate here. I'm not just taking a side just for the side of an argument. I 100% echo everything you've said about it being disgusting, disappointing, makes you not want to cheer for him, makes him not want to be a guy who plays for a team that you're a fan of. At the same time, I don't think this is such a tough needle to thread. You always want sports leagues to put safety and well-being of people first, not just their athletes, right, but other people.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned the family, not only the wife experiencing the direct violence, but the impact of the children. I don't believe that a domestic violence incident is a disqualifier for ever having a sports athletic career again. Is that a fair? Now, I'm not saying that he should be rushed to sign, but like, and so I don't have a good answer for when is it okay or what is it okay.
I'd like to say that like it would be nice if like if the legal system wasn't abysmal, that like if you went through that and then you came out with like the proper punishments on that, then okay, then you could try to reset your career, assuming that also came with amount of counseling and help and therapy, like for anger management or for violence, like any of that sort of stuff. Like, I guess I'd be willing to hear that conversation, but just like none of those guardrails are in place, man. You know what I mean?
Yes. And the other thing about it is we've spent so long ignoring, covering, like for the sake of leaked images, not wanting things to get out, where it's like, man, if throughout the whole course of your history, or at least if you had a 25 or 30 year track record, any league of treating this like a very serious issue, we'd be okay with, okay, a person has served their legal time, they have taken hits financially that counts as punishment, they've been through, you know, league stuff, I'm okay with them trying to have a career again because they, you know, and they seem remorseful and whatever. You know, again, it's a tough issue. I never would want to be seen as being light or soft on it. And I do think it has the added buildup, like you said, of so many years of doing it, handling it the wrong way, that even if they started doing it 100% right, you'd be like, all right, but I don't trust you because for so many years, we know that you would have helped a player lie to cover up something just so that we didn't have to hear about it associated with your league. And that's not just the NBA. That's every sports league and even extending beyond sports, like companies, right?
I mean, it's also like even you see like, you know, league insiders who cover the NBA, Woj, Shams, Chris Haynes, like Brian Windhorst, these guys that trip over one another trying to break like, oh, this veteran signed for the minimum with, you know, Chicago or whatever. But like TMZ reported this. It's like no one around the league wants to, everyone wants to sweep this under the rug.
Yeah.
No one wants to talk about it. And like if and when Miles Bridges ever plays in the NBA again, like it's not like people aren't going to like mention this stuff on the broadcast. Like it's going to be like, where was he the last 3 years or 2 years or year or 2 months? Like maybe some team out there is gross enough to sign him after this.
Or it'll be triumphant comeback when he's, you know,
I'm sure some people will look at that
player of the league in the second round. It's like, I guess I'm of the, if we are much, whatever. I don't think people should go to jail forever for domestic violence. I don't think it's a life sentence. I think as a society, we've realized people living together is sometimes a tough thing. That doesn't ever excuse violence. It should be, you know, punished, all that should be punished, prosecuted. People should be protected. It should be talked about more than it is. By saying I don't think the guy should be banished from the NBA, I hope that it doesn't put me in the camp of, oh, well, you're just soft and trying to cover it up, right? It is a very tight needle. We've done it so wrong one way. I'm okay with us if we're overcorrecting a little bit, but ultimately I do think there's a place where people should, like you said, first starts with the law.
Wishing
that were well. But admitting it up front, educating players, and it's not education of, we don't want this to happen because it's going to look bad for our league. It's here, you know, here's where anger management can be a problem. Here's where if you're doing these things, sometimes they can lead to these other things, or, you know, learning about yourself, learning about life and what relationships are like. It'll be an interesting situation. I'm with you on, I'd prefer the Hornets not to sign him.
You can't do it. I just don't think you can do it right now. Yeah, I don't think you can do it. I don't think he should be playing. I don't want to watch him play basketball anytime soon. And I don't think he should be playing basketball anytime soon. That's like, should not be the priority for him right now.
I think that's a
total... And there are channels to get help for this that don't require you being on an NBA roster to do also.
Yeah. Well said. Brian Geisinger, ACCSports.com. He's going to stick with us for a couple more minutes because we're 90 minutes into the show. We got 90 minutes left, and it's halftime.
And now your halftime entertainment.
All right, I want to start off with something that you brought to my attention, Hayes Permar.
That's right.
25th anniversary of Lilith Fair.
25 years ago, Lilith Fair. Who was your favorite Lilith Fair artist, Brian Geisinger? I've got a list for you. Do you remember Lilith Fair?
No, is it bad that I don't know what this is?
I guess you don't know what it is at all? All right, that's definitely a generational thing. Lilith Fair was basically on the heels of like Lollapalooza when music festivals were becoming a thing. This was an all-female one.
Oh.
So it was like Sarah McLachlan,
Terry McBride.
Yes, she was the big name.
Sheryl Crow.
This is definitely a generational thing, because it was like, even if you didn't know it.
Oh, Fiona Apple.
They were spoofing it on Saturday Night Live or something. You know, it was like, it was talked about. Paula Cole, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? Susan Mary Chapin Carpenter, The Cardigans. My only beef is, how did Juliana Hatfield end up on the secondary stage, dude? Come on. Susanna Hoff, secondary stage? That's the Bengals. But nah, Lilith Fair was huge. It also feels like in the wake of Supreme Court rulings curtailing abortion rights, feels like Lilith Fair needs to make a little bit of a comeback. Like, that was one of the things that they, it was a women's concert, and it was, you know, pressing women artists, female artists to the front of, not only in their field of like, hey, you know, female artists should be able to headline festivals, and we can throw successful festivals just as well. We don't have to be the eighth person on the bill behind Red Hot Chili Peppers or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think they also, you know, use it as a chance to activate and engage with women about women's rights and other things. So 25-year anniversary to Lilith Fair. I was hoping there'd be, like, somebody super cool on, like, the second or third list that, like, nobody ever heard of in 1997. Like Adele.
Yeah.
Like, so, and, like, you know, like Adele so-and-so, some 13-year-old singer that was there just, like, Karina. Yeah, but I didn't find anybody that was like, oh, man, they're huge now. But, yes, Lilith Fair. I'd be lying if I said I ever went to a Lilith Fair concert, but it was, like, a cultural. I own CDs of Sarah McLachlan, Sheryl Crow, Tracy Chapman, Jewel. I don't own a Paula Cole CD, but I own the Dawson's Creek soundtrack, so I think that counts.
Yeah, it counts.
Because I don't want to wait. I like Mary Chapin Carpenter, love Emmylou Harris, Lisa Loeb, Indigo Girls. I mean, come on, that's a strong lineup. I would go see a lot of those artists, but in 1997, as a senior in high school, I probably thought I was a little too cool to go to Lilith Fair. what next up on Halftime?
All right, over the weekend, longtime ESPN personality and the original sports betting guy, Hank Goldberg, passed away.
Wow.
Hammer and Hank,
age 82.
Wow.
One thing I didn't like about this, and there's probably somebody who knows Hammer and Hank from, like, the first 50 years of his career that I don't know about, that, you know, associated him with, like, the Indianapolis Star or something. But, like, to me, he was always ESPN, right? Mm-hmm. He's always the dude that, like, Berman talked to. And he also was talking gambling when, like, I didn't really understand gambling,
yeah.
Right? Like, Berman would make his picks against the spread.
I'm sure there was, like, a very mathematical formula that Berman was using.
No, it was just him picking.
Yeah, I know.
But I didn't even understand what it meant of, like, wait, you just picked the team to lose, but what does it mean they're winning because they're plus four? Like, I don't even understand. But I always associated hammering Hank Goldberg with ESPN, and, like, all the headlines were, like, CBS... You know, CBS's Hank Goldberg. I was like, okay, I get that he finished his career.
Or that he, like, was a sportscaster in Newark in, like, 1962
it's
or,
like,
whatever.
It's like a Carlton Tudor, long-time North Carolina legend, right, who finished his career with WRAL writing for online stuff. But if somebody said WRAL's Carlton Tudor, I'd be like, now hold on.
By the way, according to Wikipedia page, Hank Goldberg, part of the Brotherhood. Studied at Duke before graduating from NYU.
Oh, just like my dad. Started at Duke and left. All right, he's in the Brotherhood. Right. but now you got to be good to make a career in gambling, like, before the internet.
Well, every league, I mean, everyone now is just like, yes, give us the money. But once upon a time, they were sidelining it as heavily as possible.
And, like, I mean, you know, a certain programming, like ESPN wouldn't allow it. Like, they wouldn't let their Monday Night Crew say what the line is, what the over-under is. But, like, randomly, they're like, all right.
Yeah.
Nobody's watching, you know, the Gillette NFL matchup at, you know, 11 p.m. on Saturday. We'll let Hammer and Hank come on there and just talk to the degenerates about what's going on.
I used to, when I think of, like, being, like, a kid first watching ESPN, the two, like, really old reporter, or three guys, I remember Hank Goldberg, Dick Schaap,
and
Beano Cook. Do you remember Beano Cook?
Oh, yes.
R.I.P. Beano Cook.
Like, there's no way he's still alive.
No, he's been dead for probably a decade.
He looked like he was about to die. Like, every time he was live on air, you're like, that guy's going to die when he gets off the air. But no, Hammer and Hank, he was a good one. Again, it was like, I don't even know if I necessarily understood what he was talking about all the time. You were like, nice. It's good to see Hammer and Hank back there. I'm 12. I don't know what it means. What's next?
All right. Final part here of Halftime Entertainment, I'm going to touch on a couple things related to Stranger Things. Now, season 4 just on Friday dropped their final two episodes of the season. I'm not going to spoil anything because I have yet to see the final episode.
Spoil away. I ain't watching it. Spoil it.
No. Yeah.
Spoil it. I don't care.
I've been off after season 1.
Overrated.
Wow.
Man, it really is.
You can't claim overrated when you haven't seen the whole thing.
There's better shows out there.
You've seen season 1. Okay. Yeah, I think you can. Finish what you were saying, because I'm going to chime in, and I'm kind of with Brian Geisinger on this one.
Okay, well, season 4 has actually been the best season, in my opinion.
So, did you even try season 2, Brian?
No, I didn't, actually.
See, I watched season 1, and It was really good. There's a lot of thriller. It's monster thrillers are hard because at some point you have to produce the monster, right? And that ultimately can be disappointing. There's a lot of movies that are like this, you know? Even like the new Batman movie, I feel like is like really good at when it's like the suspense of like finding the villain, but then when I feel like it drops
Paul
off.
Paul Dano shows up.
It drops off a little bit when once you start realizing things, right?
Spoiler, yeah.
So like to me, that Stranger Things has that same vibe of like, whoa, what's happening? Lost, that show, it was like the anticipation of what's going on was better. Once they started explaining what was happening, it was like, all right, this kind of stinks. Like, I suspended my belief long enough. I could suspend it no longer. But like, so that's how I was with Stranger Things. The build up, the lights. Obviously, the 80s nostalgia was cool, but then once you had to actually explain everything, it was like, nah, this explanation isn't as cool as it should be.
Well, here's the thing. That's not the main monster.
Yeah, I see.
But there are more seasons for that.
Multiple monsters, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, as I was getting to
R.I.P., who'd they kill in season one? Barb?
Barb.
I was mad about that. They never brought Barb back. That pissed me off.
Okay. Well, sorry about that.
All right. What else you got from Stranger Things?
All right. Well, Stranger Things, they're going to have one more season five, and it looks like they're going to start filming that next year. So it looks like it's going to be released in 2024.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute.
And it's going to be shorter than this current season.
Well, how could it not be? Didn't they do a bifurcated season four?
Yeah.
You can't do a two-part season, unless it's your last season.
Although Netflix is like, we kind of are struggling right now. Yeah. You guys. So if you can just make some more of those, we'll give you a big bag of money.
The second part of season four is only two episodes.
All right, but still.
But they're long episodes.
Bifurcated seasons are only for final seasons. You can't have a two-part season four and then just go back to have a regular season five.
Well,
it's
I don't
not
know
how
if
this
they're
going
to do a regular.
It's not how any of this works.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of like BG. Like, I'm surprised at how huge Stranger Things has stayed, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what its sticking point is. And again, admittedly, I tried to go along with season two and was like, I can't stick with it.
It definitely part of it is like it. The show is like objectively good and slick. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Just because we say it's overrated doesn't mean the show isn't good.
Yep.
And by the way, I'm getting texts from people listening that are angry with us right now.
As they should.
But also, there is a massive media apparatus around it where like BuzzFeed is going to write 72 stories a day. They're all going to go trending about like, what's up with Will in the most recent episode of Stranger Things.
The other things I give them credit for is, it is hard. Like, sitcoms in the 80s used to always struggle with this problem, but the good thing was, like, the kids were always, like, the fifth most important character, right? The adults were the thing. But, like, when you start a show with kids that are, like, 12, you have no idea what these kids are going to be when they're, like, 16 and 17. And yeah. I mean that from, like, a looks, at, like, yeah. like you know, like, you don't yeah. know what you're dealing with. And so kudos to them for, like, mostly keeping the game together, I guess. But yeah, it's
especially like there was like a pandemic that happened in the middle. Like,
yeah,
it's happening still, but like that probably complicated things as well.
Do you have beef with? I can't remember what the exact thing they got wrong. I see some people that are like love the Durham references, but then I see Durham residents who are like, "Hey man, you can't be intersecting Cornwallis and I can't remember what, like you can't be
this Coal Mill Road is
where is the verisimilitude here?
Yeah, you
Come
can't
on.
Be naming a corner of a town. You like you're just name checking two streets and you didn't actually check to see if they intersect when you said to meet at the corner of Cornwallis and something else. Like that I don't like. That's like taking a ferry from OBX to Chapel Hill.
I was going
to
say, I wish the creators of Outer Banks would get mad at that. They're like, copying our style. We have horrible geography on our show. That's our lane, all right?
Like, local small towns like Raleigh and Durham, yes, I'm calling them small towns, they love to be name-checked on big shows. They hate it when you get some reference, like, nitpicky wrong. They do not like that.
Well, they actually did here in season four directly refer to Durham, North Carolina in this season.
Oh, fantastic. They still don't know where the roads are.
The Brotherhood also.
Yes.
I'm looking at the Adam Gold Show doc, the official roadmap of how this show is run. What happens? What's going to be talked about? What audio will be played? All of the plans laid out here before me. And, you know, that's how Dennis Cox and I talk. What do we want to talk about? We add things in. Hey, I need some audio here. Hey, here's some cool audio you should use. Or, hey, here's some updated info. And Adam Gold, much like the rest of the world, is off on vacation this week somewhere, hopefully having fun. Maybe he's just chilling, shoveling horse stuff around his horse farm and just not doing the show.
He's probably working.
He usually is. But usually the stuff on the document is the stuff from the last show. So, like, you're going in there and taking stuff out, right? But there was one note that was clearly left specifically for me. It says, Gold won his first four Wimbledon plays. I think he's updating on the weekend. Then it went the other way. Richard Gasquet and Liam Brody both lost. Then we didn't get a break of serve both ways in the first set of Rafael Nadal's straight set wins. So that's minus 300 right there. Good thing India got the better of England in cricket. Really, Gold? Really?
Yeah, he bet on it.
Plus 165. And Raleigh's Chesson Hadley finished in the top 20. Mm-hmm. Actually, he made it in the top 10. That was a plus 350. I respect that. I respect Gold betting on the local guys and winning.
Yeah,
so that
well,
is plus 315 in the stretch. And he ends with, Hayes, don't screw it up. So Gold is basically up $4,000 so far this week.
Units.
We're going to see how far I can bring that down with my reckless plays. It is time for Place Your Bets.
Place your bets. Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you one.
By the way, I took on a futures bet Webb Simpson to finish in the top five at the John Deere. Didn't even make the cut. So, therefore, now he's Charlotte's Webb Simpson.
Okay, sure. That's fair enough. I could have told you. John Deere is not. He's saving it for the Wyndham. He's, yeah. He, some guys, Tiger builds his schedule around the majors. Mm-hmm. Webb Simpson builds his major around the Wyndham, baby.
Okay.
Because he literally named a baby after the Wyndham. It's where he got his first win. He's always good there. He's going to be good again. Don't sweat it. He'll be back. All right. Where are we starting? I'll go first.
Go for it.
It's upset season in Wimbledon, baby.
Okay.
I don't like that Rafael Nadal, one of the guys that I want to cheer for, is going against the only American left on the men's side, mm-hmm. Taylor Fritz. I don't like that. But
PGA guy?
He is a Virginia guy. But Taylor Fritz beat Rafael Nadal earlier this year. Granted, it was hard court, and it wasn't with a, you know, potential Grand Slam title on the line. But Fritz is 1-1 against Nadal, so he's not scared. And I just find good value. Very rarely do you find somebody – well, I mean – anybody playing against Djokovic or Nadal is usually a pretty big underdog. I like the value in Fritz, plus 220. I'm putting 100 units on that. That's going off tomorrow morning, so I had to get that in today. We'll be able to recap it tomorrow. That's my first play.
Okay. Going Major League Baseball. About a month or so ago, I was on the Shohei Ohtani home run bandwagon, and he finally did hit one. I'm going to go back on that bandwagon. Ohtani hits a homer, plus 425.
Okay. All right. I feel that. All right. Next up, I'm going with another underdog. I don't like all underdogs, but it does have the potential for a huge payday. Very rarely in baseball, much like tennis, once you get to this deep in a Grand Slam tournament, it should be 50-50 for everybody, right? Like maybe you got the better starting pitcher, or maybe your team has a better hitting lineup, in which case you're like, you know, minus 160 or something. But the Astros are big old favorites over the Royals tonight. Wow. And my man, Zach Greinke, who does not sign autographs. Did you see this last
yes,
week?
Yes, I did.
When he pump faked the kid and like acted like he was going to come over and sign the ball. And he's like, nope. Zach Greinke's one. Joey Votto is one of those dudes, too, who like, he's not a jerk to people. Like, he doesn't like cuss at you or like throw things or do mean things. But like, I am totally fine with an athlete to the opposing fans being like a little bit of a jerk in ways that don't matter, right? Like you can't actually go up and knock a beer out of a guy's hand just because he's an opposing fan, right?
I say do it.
But if he's talking smack to you and you want to talk smack back, you can do that. And if you want to pump fake and act like you're going to sign an autograph for an opposing fan and then be like, nah, sorry. Sorry, kid.
Yeah.
Eat it. I'm fine with that. Zach Greinke's my boy. He's on the mound tonight. Plus 205 Royals over the Astros.
Okay, I'm also going to stick with the Angels. Mike Trout doesn't get a hit, plus 160.
You're just all in on the Angels. Yep. All right, finally, I'm going with the Indiana Fever today. They're plus 460 against the Seattle Storm. I'm off the Storm because they didn't keep our girl Alyssa Kunane.
Okay.
It's another big underdog play, but I'm taking it. Fever, plus 460 to win.
My final one, soccer matchup. The new Saints play Linfield. No idea who they are. Give me a draw plus 250.
I'm changing mine real quick, though. I'm taking the Fever plus the 10.5 points. So it's, okay. only, so it's only minus 110. They're not going to win.
This is the Adam Gold Show.